Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
It's great to be here.
So today, let's talk about control. Not, you know, managing your schedule, but something much more fundamental.
Neurological control?
Exactly. The only reason you can focus on my voice right now, or even just sit still, is because your brain is constantly and expertly telling itself no.
It's all about inhibition. We tend to think about the brain's go signals, the neurons firing.
Right, the exciting stuff.
But without the stop signals, all that excitation is just, well, it's just noise, a seizure, basically.
It's less like an on-off switch and more like a high-end audio mixing board.
That's a great way to put it. You're not just silencing things, you're shaping the signal.
And the main fader on that board, the most important one, is a receptor called GABA.
The GABA-A receptor. It's an ion channel that, when it opens, effectively calms a neuron down, making it less likely to fire.
But here's the thing that's so incredibly complex. This fader, this GABA-R receptor, isn't one standard part. It's a ring of five protein subunits.
A pentamer, yep.
And the brain has a sort of Lego set of 19 different types of subunits to build it from.
19. You've got your alphas, betas, gammas.
The number of possible combinations is just, it's astronomical. We know the brain isn't random, but we haven't known the actual blueprints.
Especially in a place like the cerebellum.
Ah, the cerebellum, that little brain at the back of your brain.
It's incredibly dense. It's crucial for motor control, balance, and as we're now learning, for a lot of emotional and social processing too.
And it presents this huge question. Does it build its receptors using just one type of part at a time? Or does it mix and match?
Does it build hybrid receptors? And that's been a real debate.
Because if it does build a unique hybrid receptor that's only in the cerebellum,
then you've got a perfect target for drug design. You could hit the cerebellum without affecting the rest of the brain.
And in this deep dive, we're looking at this study that pretty much settles that debate. We finally have the blueprints.
We do indeed. Today we celebrate the work of Cheng Sun, Jennifer N. Jacques, Kevin M. Wright, and Eric Gua.
They're from the Volum Institute at Oregon Health and Science University.
And their paper is titled, Molecular Assemblies and Pharmacology of Cerebellar GABA Receptors.
It's published in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in February of 2026.
And it is a real tour de force. They combined imaging, biochemistry, mass spectrometry, and cryo-EM to build a structural atlas. It's incredible work.
Before we dig into the methods, let's just underscore the clinical importance here. Why is everyone so obsessed with GABA receptors?
Well, because they're the target for some of the most common drugs on the planet.
We're talking about benzodiazepines.
Valium, Xanax, Clonopins.
Yeah. And general anesthetics, too.
And those drugs are effective, but they're not subtle.
No, they're sledgehammers. They reduce anxiety, but they also cause drowsiness, memory problems, motor issues. And the reason for all that collateral damage is a specific subunit, isn't it?
It is the alpha-1 subunit. It's sort of the default general purpose alpha subunit. It's everywhere. In your cortex, hippocampus, everywhere.
So when you take a Valium, you're basically turning down the volume on the entire brain.
You are, but the cerebellum, it's special. It has alpha-1, but it's also pretty much the only place in the brain that has the alpha-6 subunit.
Alpha-6 is almost exclusive to the cerebellar granule cells.
Right, and those cells are processing a massive amount of sensory information. They need a very, very fine-tuned braking system.
So if you could design a drug that only hits alpha-6?
You could potentially treat cerebellar disorders without knocking the patient out, but that hinges on knowing if alpha-6 lives by itself or if it co-assembles with alpha-1.
Which brings us back to the big debate, segregation versus mixing.
And for a long time, we just couldn't see it. The technology wasn't there to get that kind of resolution.
So let's walk through how this team finally cracked the code. It starts with their choice of animal model.
Right, they didn't use mice.
They used rats.
They did, and for a very practical reason. The rat cerebellum is about 5 times bigger than a mouse's.
Which just gives you more raw material to work with.
Exactly, when you're trying to purify tiny amounts of protein, that scale makes all the difference.
So they have the tissue. Now they need to fish out the specific receptors they're interested in.
This is where they used a specific antibody called EE3 as their hook.
And this antibody grabs onto the alpha-1 subunit. So they weren't searching for alpha-6.
No, they were asking a cleverer question. They asked, if we pull out everything that has an alpha-1 in it, what else comes along for the ride?
If the segregationists were right, they'd just get more alpha-1.
But if the mixers were right, you'd find alpha-6 stuck to it.
But getting them out of the cell membrane is notoriously difficult.
Oh, it's a nightmare. These proteins live in a fatty membrane. You pull them into water, they unfold. They're ruined.
So they use these things called lipid nanodiscs. I always picture them as little life rafts.
That's the perfect analogy. You're basically scooping up the receptor with a little patch of its native membrane wrapped around it.
So it stays stable and happy?
It stays in its native state, which is absolutely critical.
Once they had these stabilized receptors, they ran them through a mass spectrometer to see what was in there.
And this was really the first smoking gun.
What did they find?
Well, they fished for alpha-1, but they found huge amounts of alpha-6 in their sample.
So they were definitely physically linked.
No doubt about it. They also found beta and gamma subunits and the delta subunit, which becomes important later.
Okay, so the ingredients are there. But that's not a blueprint. It doesn't tell you the arrangement.
For that, you need a picture. You need cryo-EM.
Cryogenic electron microscopy. It's the technology that's really changed structural biology.
Completely. You flash freeze your samples in this glassy, non-crystalline ice, and then you hit them with an electron beam.
And the raw output is... Well, it's not a clear picture, is it? It looks like static.
It's just noisy shatters. The magic is in the computation. They took over 2 million of these particle images.
2 million.
And used software to sort them, classify them, and average them together to build a high-resolution 3D model.
And they did this for the receptor by itself and also bound to a drug.
Right, a drug called PZII029. But let's start with the native structure. What did they see?
This is the big reveal.
It is. They resolved 8 different structures, but the one for the history books is the mixed assembly. They proved it exists.
They found the hybrid?
They found the hybrid. It's a pentamer with both alpha-1 and alpha-6 in the same ring.
And it's not a random jumble. There's a specific order.
A very specific order. If you go around the ring, it's beta-2, then alpha-1, then beta-1, then alpha-6, then gamma-2.
Wow. That is an architectural spec sheet. Beta-2, alpha-1, beta-1, alpha-6, gamma-2.
And you see how asymmetric it is? 2 different alphas, 2 different betas. That asymmetry is likely key to its function.
And you mentioned something about the subunits influencing each other.
Yes, this was fascinating. The shape of a subunit, like beta-1, actually changes depending on its neighbors.
So its context within the ring alters its structure.
The neighborhood matters just as much as the individual part. It's a beautiful example of induced fit.
Okay, so the cerebellum has this custom-built hybrid break. Now, the pharmacology. How do you target this unique machine?
This is where that drug, PZII029, comes in.
A pyrazole quinolinidone.
Let's just call it PZ.
Good idea. So this drug is known to be selective for alpha-6.
And they wanted to see why. How does it achieve that selectivity, especially when alpha-6 is sitting right next to alpha-1?
And the structure they got is just... It's amazing. PZ doesn't act like a key in a lock.
No, it's more like a wedge or a crowbar. It binds at the classic benzodiazepine site between an alpha and a gamma subunit.
But the shape of the drug molecule itself is described as a boomerang.
A rigid, U-shaped boomerang. And when it shoves itself into that binding pocket, it forces a specific part of the protein called loop C to swing up and out of the way.
And that movement doesn't stay local.
No, it propagates. Forcing that loop to move causes the entire top portion of the receptor, the whole extracellular domain, to expand and twist.
The entire ring changes shape.
The entire ring. It locks the receptor into a state that's much more sensitive to GABA. It's a beautiful allosteric mechanism.
So in this mixed receptor, there are 2 potential binding sites for a drug like this, right?
That's right. The alpha-1 gamma interface and the alpha-6 gamma interface.
And the drug binds to both.
It does. But, and this is the whole secret to its selectivity, it binds differently to each one.
This is where that Cation-Pi interaction comes into play.
Exactly. At the alpha-1 site, it's held in place by a pretty standard hydrogen bond. But at the alpha-6 site, something special happens.
Let's break down Cation-Pi for a second.
Okay, so an aromatic ring in a protein has a cloud of electrons. That's the pi part. A cation is just a positive charge.
And a Cation-Pi interaction is when that positive charge gets stuck to the face of that electron cloud.
It's a specific kind of electrostatic stickiness. And to make it happen in the alpha-6 pocket, one of the protein's own residues, an arginine, has to physically swing out of the way.
So the higher energy interaction, it takes more work for the protein to accommodate the drug at that site.
Precisely. And that difference in the binding chemistry, that specific cation pi dance required at alpha 6 is the key.
It's what allows for selectivity.
It's what allows for selectivity. You can design drugs that are optimized for that specific interaction, and they'll have little to no effect at the alpha 1 site.
That's an incredible level of detail for drug designers to work with.
It's a game changer. We've moved from just shapes to, you know, electron clouds and energy landscapes.
So let's bring it all together. What's the so what here? What's the clinical payoff for knowing this?
The payoff is precision medicine. If we can specifically target these alpha 6 containing hybrid receptors,
like you're almost entirely in the cerebellum,
we can develop treatments for conditions linked to cerebellar problems without the heavy side effects of current drugs.
So motor disorders like ataxia, maybe?
Absolutely, but it might be even bigger than that. We know there are genetic links between the alpha 6 subunit and conditions like schizophrenia and autism spectrum disorder.
And the cerebellum is deeply involved in sensory gating, filtering all the information coming into the brain.
Yes. And in those conditions, that filter can be impaired. A drug that could gently tune this specific cerebellar circuit without causing global sedation could be, well, transformative.
It's true, circuit-based medicine.
Exactly.
Okay, before we finish, we have to address the mystery. The ghost in the machine.
The Delta subunit.
The mass spec said it was there. The ingredients list was clear. But in the final 3D maps, it was gone.
Vanished. And this is a really common challenge in cryo-EM. The technique relies on averaging thousands of identical images.
So if your particle is flexible or if it has different shapes?
It just blurs out. It becomes noise. The fact that they couldn't see any Delta-containing receptors strongly suggests those receptors are too dynamic or maybe too fragile to resolve with this method.
So there's this whole other population of cerebellar receptors that are still, essentially, in the dark.
It's a great reminder that even with these incredible advances, biology is always one step ahead. We're seeing the most stable, most rigid structures. The wobbly stuff is still hiding.
So if you had to boil this entire study down to one take-home message, what would it be?
I'd say it's that the cerebellum builds its own hardware. It creates these custom hybrid GABA-A receptors by mixing the common alpha 1 with the rare alpha 6.
And we now have the atomic blueprint for that custom hardware.
We do. And we know how to design a key for that very specific lock, which opens the door to precision therapies for a whole range of neurological and psychiatric conditions.
It really makes you wonder then. We've just looked at the cerebellum.
Right.
If the brain is building these custom receptor mixes for motor control, how many other unique region-specific architectures are out there?
Right.
What's the blueprint for the receptors that govern memory in the hippocampus or fear in the amygdala?
I think we're going to find that every brain circuit has its own bespoke molecular machinery. We are just beginning to appreciate the true diversity of the brain's parts list.
Which is an exciting place to be.
It really is.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. In a circle in a cold blue glow. Beta, alpha, beta, alpha, gamma. That's the way they go. Same frame, new faces in the quiet flow. Cerebellar gates, stay open, let it show. Scaffold snapping to focus in the dark. Alpha 1 meets alpha 6, different.